Hi, I'm Jared Fuller. Welcome to Scratching the Surface. One of the themes of this recent season of Scratching the Surface, in my mind, is uncovering and examining the infrastructure for design discourse, for design media, for design conversation. I've talked to editors and publishers and booksellers and administrators to think about how ideas spread and how communities can be formed and created. I don't know about you, but often when I think about design discourse, I think about it as a binary. There is the practice and there's the theory. There's the profession and there's the academy. This, of course, is a reductive way to think about it. And one way I found to break this mindset is to think about the nonprofit. Whether that's AIGA for graphic design or the AIA in architecture, these nonprofits serve, in their ideal sense at least, as a bridge between these multiple discourses. They sit somewhere between all of the others. Architecture, it seems to me, has a small network of these nonprofits, whether that's member organizations or small-scale galleries or think tanks that help disseminate design ideas and create community across design disciplines. My guest today is Jacob R. Moore, the newly appointed executive director of the Architectural League of New York, a nonprofit just like the one I described that was founded in 1881 to support critically transformative work in the allied fields that shape the built environment. The Architectural League hosts events and roundtables, offers grants and competitions, and publishes thinking across architecture and the related fields. Before taking this role, just a little over 6 months ago, Jacob was the associate director of the Temple Hoyne Buell Center for the Study of American Architecture at Columbia University, and he helped co-found the Avery Review, a consistently interesting platform for architectural ideas. In this conversation, I was really curious to hear from Jacob about the mission of the Architectural League and how the projects they work on are supported and organized. But I was also interested in this role of the nonprofits generally, how to think about this as a driver of discourse, both through in-person events and activities and publishing projects. I think Jacob is doing some really interesting and fascinating work, and I really appreciated the thoughtfulness he brought to this conversation. If you are at all interested in discourse, interested in alternative practices, interested in institution building, I think you'll find a lot here to enjoy. If you like this episode and what we do here at Scratching the Surface, I hope you consider supporting us on Patreon. Patreon supporters get bonus interviews, full transcripts, an exclusive monthly newsletter, and help keep this show free for everybody all the time. You can head over to patreon.com/surfacepodcast to sign up. Thanks for listening, and here is my conversation with Jacob R. Moore. You were appointed the executive director of the Architectural League of New York back last summer, but you started in September, right? You started like early September, so you've been in the role for almost 6 months at this point.
Yeah, I think I've entered my sixth month. Is that right? It was at the beginning of September, right after Labor Day.
Yeah, September 5th is what the press release said. Okay,
there you go.
So how's it been so far? I mean, first 6 months, I mean, you're stepping into an institution with a big history. Can you just talk a little bit about what that's been like so far and sort of how you've been thinking about it?
Yeah, sure. I mean, it has been, it's been pretty incredible. It's a steep learning curve in a lot of really energizing ways. Yeah. So, I mean, we were founded in 1881. I've started thinking of us as almost 150, but I may be jumping the gun a bit on almost. In 2031, we will be 150. And so there's a lot of history there to absorb. So this 6 months, I mean, it's I'm going to be learning for a lot longer than these 6 months. I think the newness will stretch. But it's been a really edifying, exciting time. I mean, so before this, I was up at Columbia for more than 10 years, in different ways, even longer. But I've sort of been thinking of this as both like a literal and metaphorical move back downtown, where one amazing part of the job is that I'm just in the mix, meeting people in a way that the Columbia work didn't really, it wasn't just part of the gig up there to be in constant touch with so many different kinds of people now. And that's been pretty incredible, these 6 months of just a lot of meeting people who move through the world of the league for different reasons. So it's been a lot, but it's been exciting and yeah, energizing.
We'll come back to your time at Columbia because I'm kind of curious in those different about those different contexts. But as you mentioned, the Architectural League was founded in 1881, and in your first director's letter, I want to read something that you wrote there and ask you a little bit about it. You wrote, "When it was founded in 1881 by a group of young architects committed to supporting one another and their community of professional peers, the Gilded Age was in full swing. The context for their creative and intellectual pursuits was a roaring fossil-fueled economy with extreme stratification by race, gender, and class. Representative politics was strained as more and more power was accumulated in fewer and fewer hands. Today, echoes from that era are uncomfortably loud." I was so struck by that because it's true. And can you sort of talk about that early mission of the league and how you see its place today in 2024 when there's so many sort of contextual rhymes there, I guess you could say?
Yeah, I mean, so there's still a lot of learning I'm doing about those early days, but in general terms, my understanding is that, it was basically a group of peers who, of course, in that moment happened to be all white, all rich, all men. I think some women moved through the circle, but in any case, by and large, it was very, emblematic of that moment. But nonetheless, they people who got together who saw a need, the academy was not what it would later become. I think it was hardly recognizable as such at that moment. And so they, recognized that, hey, if we want to get better at what we do, making a space for that to happen is kind of up to us. And so that's sort of at base how I understand the initial impulses of the league was people sort of educating one another, offering crits to one another, encouraging each other's work at the same time that they were critical of it in a sort of, productive way, hopefully. So the moment we're in now, I mean, in the I think that the structurally, that need is still very much there. I think this now we have a much more solid and developed, robust, really kind of like there's an academy that is a real space, obviously, for knowledge production and a space to which professionals move, sort of by definition. But nonetheless, there's interest in the professional community and sort of paraprofessional community to keep those kinds of like conversations going outside of an academic context. And so the league continues to really serve, I think, a really similar, at least again, structurally thinking about kind of position, a really similar purpose to those days. Now, the flip side of that, or a challenge that comes with what I think is a really noble like intent there, is that there's a fine line between kind of, let's say, community and club. And I would, in early days, it was very much on the club side of that spectrum. And there's been lots of work over these 140 some odd years, especially in the last 50, 40, to open up the walls of that club and make it more of a porous community, but one that nonetheless serves a similar kind of aim, which is to I think one phrase that they used is people gathering in a sort of in a spirit of voluntary association. You know, they don't have to be there. It's not, they're not automatically a part of this by virtue of their license, for example, you know. These are people who choose to gather together and try and help one another do better work. So that persists, but we want to make sure that it's an open, porous community that is truly reflective, not just of the sort of allied fields as they are, but the allied fields as we, you know, hope they can become.
So how do you do that? I mean, like, you know, you do programming, you publish, you know, you have these sort of different events and initiatives. How do you sort of think about the Architectural League's role within that larger, you know, sort of architecture and design community, if you will?
Yeah, I mean, it's, I think it's, there are different answers to that. Some of them depend on the time. Some of them depend on sort of, I guess one way to think about it is that, so we are technically a membership organization, I think, and we're really trying to lean into what it means to be a actual member of the organization. That's not at all required to participate in the things that we do. But nonetheless, I say that to say that we're as our community's needs change, so does our work. In other words, we try to structure ourselves so that we can be supportive of the needs of the moment of the people of our constituents. So flexibility is like an important value of the formats in which we work, sort of year over year, decade over decade. So yeah, there's always been an exhibition layer, a public programs layer. There are, you know, competitions and prizes and other forms of kind of recognition, other more informal community building kind of exercises. We have, Urban Omnibus is our in-house magazine. We're actually celebrating Omnibus's 15th anniversary this year, which is,
oh, wow.
I know. I know. So that somehow, I mean, obviously I wasn't involved prior to September, at the league in this capacity, but I've been a reader of Omnibus for a long time.
Contributor.
I 15 years flew by. Anyway, so I offered many of our programs do like Omnibus or Emerging Voices or the League Prize. We have things that have been around now for many years. And that sustaining some of those is one way in which you could sort of gather people around certain, topics and advanced discourse and practice. But I don't know. I mean, in this moment where I'm new, I'm really trying hard to take the time to do a lot of listening and figure out what it is that we do best so that we can lean into that. And at the same time, I'm doing all this listening. I'm trying to, you know, I've been a member of the sort of ecology of like architectural culture institutions in New York and beyond for like a while. And I want to support other institutions doing what they do best. In other words, not that we're all, you know, relegated to our lanes or anything that's quite too restrictive like that, but nonetheless, there's a lot of work to be done. And I'm really keen for everybody to be supportive of one another's work and, you know, collaboration, not competition kind of thing.
Yeah. Yeah.
So anyway, so I'm in a moment now where I'm trying to first and foremost understand what the league is best positioned to do so that we can sort of see doing that really well as our responsibility. But there are a lot of different answers to that. I mean, I think, yeah, all the formats you referenced are in the mix. And the sort of degree to which we focus on one over the other is really a sort of a function of either the topic at hand or the moment we're in. You know, obviously we went digital during COVID in ways that lots of other people did. Anyway, so it's variable.
I mean, so if that question was sort of like the like practical, how do you do it question, let me ask you that question again from a more sort of like philosophical perspective, maybe. Because I really liked what you said about sort of leaning into what you do best, what the Architectural League can do best, and earlier when you were talking about how when it started, there was not a sort of robust academy. And I'm wondering if how you think about the role of the Architectural League specifically, or you could even say architecture and design nonprofits generally, the role they play in this larger design discourse. I think a lot about, you know, being, I guess, an academic. I guess I'm an academic now. the role that academia plays as opposed to practice and the profession and vice versa, and where each of those sides lead. And the nonprofit is sort of this third piece that I admittedly don't often think about. How do you see that fitting into this larger, how do you see nonprofits fitting into this larger conversation?
Yeah, I mean, I think it'll be easiest for me to come at that broader question through the league, because, well, anyway, we'll sort of see where it takes us. But so we actually have recently updated our mission, and it's that exercise that has been really collaborative and amazing to sort of move through with the board and the staff and the broader community. And the mission as it is now, the Architecture League supports critically transformative work in the allied fields of the built environment. And so for me, I thought to say that now because I think the action of support is something I'm really trying to kind of like organize us around. And in terms of what that means, like more broadly in the field, I think that one thing that like makes us, so we're not the academy and we're not practice, somewhere in between. And I think there, like you said, that's a version of that is true for a lot of nonprofits, though sort of everyone's positioning, especially relative to practice, you know, they might calibrate it differently. Anyway,
right.
We really are sort of right somewhere in the squishy middle. And one way I'm thinking about our work is that, you know, academia can be alienating for some, as can practice, for people who are trying to do a certain kind of work, you know, or who have like, big ambitious climate plans or are all about equity, trying to do really what we might call like transformative work. That work is really, really challenging for different reasons, but, but work that architecture, and when I say architecture, I also speak more, I hope that's heard more broadly than just, you know, capital A architecture, but
yeah. Well, I have a question about that coming up. So.
Yeah. Anyway, that's sort of always a through line. In any case, one way I'm thinking about the work of the league and perhaps the work of peer nonprofits more broadly is that we are trying to meet people with that ambition where they are and support them in doing that work. I think another way of seeing the work of an organization like the league might be that we're inspiring people to do that work, but I kind of see it the other way around. Meeting people, like I think people want to do difficult work. It's just difficult. And so I'm trying to think about how we might help people keep their ambitions high and move through some of those challenges. And there's, again, back to the question we talked about before, I think that takes a lot of different forms, how that support sort of is made material. But nonetheless, like it's something about like a lot of our, many of our constituents are like young practitioners, people who are relatively recently out of school. And to me, that's kind of emblematic of what we're talking about here. Like, people who have before, you know, the grind kind of grinds them down.
Right.
I think I'm hopeful that, and then there's years of history at the league of doing this. So I'm really trying to, you know, just building on work that's been done, but to meet those people in particular, but there's plenty of other versions. It's not limited to people who are fresh out of school. Like I said, in their hope to make real change in the fields and like through the fields, identifying barriers and helping kind of like navigate them. So I don't know if that's too abstract to be helpful, but that's how I've been thinking about
Yeah, no, that actually makes a lot of sense. Something I was thinking about as you were sort of talking about that, I think the phrase you used was the squishy middle. Is something that seem something that it seems like someone like you, something a place like the Architectural League can do is be a platform or provide an infrastructure for ideas and discourse and methods that are, for lack of a better word, outside of the mainstream, alternative forms of practice for types of practice that are not inherently market driven. These sort of big ideas, climate, equity, et cetera, that we all want to talk about. But like you said, you sort of you get into the grind of work, or even in academia, you get as a student and even as a professor, you get that sense of like, oh, like you got to get a job after this. That middle area sometimes is the thing that gets lost. That there are other ways to do this. That there are emerging forms of practice. Is that something that you're thinking about? Like ways to ask these big questions that just, those two other sides can't. They want to, but they just can't. You know what I mean?
Absolutely. And to not and to think about these things porously, like to understand that squishy middle as connective. So, I think it's like kind of like building bridges between places that are having different versions of these conversations to try and connect people with resources and help sort of build alliances and solidarities that might build momentum. So it's shining a light on things that are happening and trying to create, pathways for new things to happen. I mean, I think also, so it's but it's not just like a small boutique firm that's trying to operate in a different way, but there are really cool initiatives, maybe small initiatives happening inside big firms, for example. Like, and this is a part of the sort of moving back downtown that I'm still really, there's so much meeting and greeting and understanding I still need to do. But sometimes there's not a ton of visibility into the bowels of some of these much larger firms that I think sometimes get a bad rap for reasons that are not entirely justified, or at least, I don't know, like I think that there are great things happening in surprising places, or people with big ambitions, that can sort of that are embedded within contexts that for in which people aren't always looking for those things. In any case, so I'm trying to keep my like talking through it. I want to keep my personal and our institutional mind open to finding the work that needs support in lots of different kinds of places, and not just in the like the young practitioner, for example, that just came out of school. I was maybe to just undercut what I was just saying. Like, it's not only there that exciting new kinds of thoughts are happening. It's other places too. And I think, again, to bring it back to the league, like something that I'm really coming to appreciate about the community of the league is that it's really there's like real interesting, we have like very senior people at firms that are super invested in the work that we're doing, and students. And everything, and really and truly everything in between. And there's something really valuable about that, I think, and pretty unique, because people really are invested. And so I'm just trying to think about infrastructures that really leverage that and make connections like all across that kind of that network.
It raises this other question that I think about often when I think about organizations like yours, or like I said before we started recording, I just talked to Jose, and he and I talked a little bit about this with Storefront. And in the graphic design side, we really just have AIGA sort of doing a similar type work. And it seems like this type of work is increasingly precarious. That squishy middle is the piece that, like you said, it sort of gets lost. And I'm wondering how you think about building upon this institution that is almost 150 years old to ensure its sustainability, to ensure that it can continue in a New York that is very different than the New York that it was started in a discipline and series of disciplines that are very different than when it started. Just like the sort of, you know, the sustainability from an economic standpoint, how do you think about that and how to sort of make sure that it outlives this moment?
Absolutely. I mean, listen, I hope we all can outlive this moment.
Yeah.
So there's that, but I mean, I think there are different answers to the question, but yeah, like what's the business model of a small nonprofit? I think is tough.
Yeah.
You know, diversification is a key mantra. So you want to have different kind of like, you know, you just look at COVID and like one stream can drop out sort of before you're aware of it. But anyway, so there are different answers. But one answer, I think, is this membership answer, which is not to say that I think, you know, all culture should be like pay to play, that you got to pick and choose, you know, your sector, and that's it. But nonetheless, there's something to, especially in this kind of paraprofessional space, something to people investing in their own kind of like continuing ed, for lack of a better term. And you know, and there's ways you can sort of tier that to try and make sure it remains meaningfully accessible, because you lose relevance if it's not. So there are limits, but there's also opportunities there. I mean, also just practically speaking, like we'll see what the future of philanthropy looks like, but I'm interested in, you know, working with foundations and thinking on big, long range, multi-year initiatives that are mission aligned. And yeah, so I'm not sure sustainability wise the implications of that, but that's something that feels worth like a worthwhile investment for us to do more of that, some more grant work. I'm also, you know, I don't know what future this holds, but I hope there's one there for us, which is more government work. We're working on a few things right now that we have a really amazing collaboration with NYSERDA. Do you know what NYSERDA is? It's the New York State Energy Research and Development Authority. Anyway, we're working with them. We've been working, I think now this is our third year, to help run a sort of recognition component of a broader program they have called Buildings of Excellence. That's really all about, they're trying to leverage all the tools that they have to drive down carbon emissions in new buildings in New York State. And so my predecessor, Rosalie Ginevro, helped get going a partnership where the league is able to kind of shepherd conversations about design quality in all of that, so that they're not just technical or exclusively technical sort of metrics that are being used to determine these quote unquote buildings of excellence. Anyway, I use that as an example to say, especially if you look federally, and you know, looking back over the last several years, there's been the federal investment in climate and infrastructure is of an order, you know, it's an order of magnitude larger than it had ever been before. And if we stand a chance of meeting the moment and you know, addressing the challenge that is climate change, and especially if we want a just transition, we're going to need much more investment in all of that. I hope that there's space for organizations like the League to help, back to what we were saying before, create channels for built environment professionals to participate in that work. Well, anyway, there's lots of, I think, forms that participation can take, but nonetheless, I think the league and again, organizations like it, there's plenty of work to be done, but that we're positioned to help kind of make connections, shape conversations, shape opportunities, and channel resources, hopefully. So anyway, that's Those are a few different answers, but again, yeah, there's no silver bullet. I fear it's kind of a bit of another form of squishiness is sort of part of the game, unfortunately, with these small nonprofits. I don't know. Do you have any ideas?
No, I wanted to know. I mean, because I feel like the architecture fields, and I'm using architecture capitally there, seem to be doing better at it than graphic design. We have one that seems in a very precarious position. Where you all have multiple, and maybe speaking to this, and you mentioned this earlier. Despite the name Architectural League, the organization historically is very interested in this sort of interdisciplinary conversation, architecture with a lowercase a, as you said. This is reflected in the board having vice presidents in different fields. You have one for architecture, for visual arts, for graphic design, et cetera. How do you think about that conversation between disciplines, which also, if there's a theme of this conversation, I guess it's going to be squishiness. There's a squishiness between these disciplines now. There's overlap between them in a lot more interesting ways, it feels like. How do you think about sort of talking to these adjacent design fields as they relate to architecture?
Yeah, I mean, for me, really, the institution, it's really just about reflecting the way the work actually happens. Like architecture has always been work that happens in conversation with, other disciplines. Like buildings obviously have all kinds of professionals involved in their bringing them into being, and of course that is still true today. So the institution is just trying, I think always trying to make sure that's reflected in how we're set up and the conversations that we're supporting. I honestly, it takes some intentionality to do that structuring, like to make sure that the board, the way programming is set up and communicated, like it takes energy to convey that commitment. But honestly, the commitment itself and like the conversations themselves very easily flow there, just because I think the nature of the work is already so like conversational across disciplines. So yeah, it's like it's a constant fact. I find myself that the imperative to think about it comes more on the messaging side of things than it does on the kind of pre-messaging like content side. I don't know if that makes sense.
And speaking of content, I like the content side. I want to go back to what you were saying earlier about Urban Omnibus turning 15. And I don't mean to overcomplicate this question, but I'm hoping we can also connect this to your previous role at the Buell Center at Columbia, where you were for 10 years. But I'm curious how you think about publishing and the idea of publishing and how that is a way to extend these networks, to extend these conversations. That's also a source, not to make this a business podcast, but that's also, it seems like a business angle there, a financial stream. Like you, I've been reading Urban Omnibus for years. My first interaction with the Buell Center was through some books that you had published. I remember that it was the public housing book. I forget the exact name of that
Let's see, the
title.
art inequality, or was it an
Yes,
older one?
the inequality one. That's right. I remember seeing that book years ago, and that was my first introduction to the Buell Center. How does publishing fit into this, and how do you see the role of publishing as a way to, sort of create infrastructure for these types of conversations?
Yeah, I mean, it's a huge part of it. I think a community can gather around an essay or a book in a totally different way and a sort of over a totally different time scale and with a totally different kind of sustainability than a community gathers around or for like, a lecture. And so it's a really important tool to sort of to use when we're thinking about building community over time. Like, so I'm just thinking about I don't know, like even with The Art of Inequality, the book you just mentioned, like that,
Yeah.
you know, the book is from 2015, I think, and still has a life that
Yeah.
gathers people together, you know, kind of can focus conversation. I don't know. Anyway, books travel in one way. With Urban Omnibus, I think it has a really, it's been an incredible, and I should give, you know, so much credit to Marianna Mogilevich, the editor in chief for Omnibus, who's been shepherding it for the last, I think, 8+ years. It's built a community, you know, all its own that shares a lot with the league, but it has its own kind of space and voice and like vitality that there's a kind of rhythm that the league is able to, we benefit so much from our adjacency to Omnibus. Like there's a the way that discourse kind of like flows through the magazine, we really feed on it. I mean, even just internally as a staff, there are, you know, they're an editorially independent entity. So, you know, there are firewalls like, you know, like between Omnibus and our board, for example, or whatever. But nonetheless, there's like, I'm trying to sort of just articulate the way that publication in particular, but I think by extension, publications more generally, can sort of energize a community in a way that it's a slower burn, I guess, is what I keep coming back to time because it feels like there's sustained, like propulsion that the publications can offer, that I really depend on, lean on, as sort of we do all this cultural work trying to move things forward slowly but surely. Anyway, so I don't know, it's important, but it's really, really hard. Publications, yeah, talk about the business model, like it's really challenging to make that work. And so, you know, institutional affiliations like the one that the league has with Omnibus are one way to make it work. But yeah, I don't know. I don't know what the sort of what the future holds for, you know, magazine, small independent magazines. But I think they're really important because again, they gather people in a very particular way that isn't easily replicable with other kinds of cultural work.
Let's stay on this thread of publishing and sort of editorial work for a second, because, you know, like I mentioned, I first came across the Buell Center through a book that you were involved with. I'm pretty sure I first came across your work with your involvement with the founding of the Avery Review, which is now 10 years old, which is also hard to
God.
believe. And in the sort of opening statement for the Avery Review, I'm not sure if you were involved in the writing of this, so I apologize, and I realize this is 10 years ago.
No, it's okay. You read it and I'll see if I remember.
In the sort of editorial statement at the beginning, you all wrote, "We see the genres of the review and the critical essay as vital, but still underutilized ways of exploring the ideas and problems that animate the field of architecture. And we hope to push those genres before they're beyond their most familiar forms, whether journalistic or academic." And in many ways, I feel like that's a mission that still resonates with me today. I think there are still not enough places for experimental writing, for writing that blurs these sort of boundaries. And I'm wondering if you could just talk a little bit about the goals of the Avery Review 10 years ago when you were sort of starting that, and sort of how you see places for publications like that today. And I know you're not involved with them anymore, but I'm sort of interested in sort of the change you see in these last 10 years and sort of places for publishing.
Yeah, I yeah, so I was involved with Avery Review from the founding all the way up until the job started at the league. So I think I made it to the 10th year, but then so anyway, recent, but yes, not important to clarify that or to emphasize that I'm no longer there. But I think that it's interesting in some ways. like, so I was involved in that. I remember that writing exercise.
Okay, great.
And there were it was a very much a co-founded
Right.
project. There were a number of us, but in some ways that feels like that totally still resonates with me, and in other ways it feels like, wow, we've come a long way, especially in terms of like online spaces that are available for writing architecture. I remember at the time, we were, well, I'll just speak for myself. Like I published I was looking for a place to publish an exhibition review and was in conversation with peers about options. And it was like a surprisingly short list of places, slash like really short list of places where something could get out there that wasn't 6 month to a year turnaround, or that wasn't, kind of like a marketing speak blog like
Right,
online
right,
space. There's
right.
no in between. And like that's definitely not true anymore. In these 10 years, there's a lot more happening in that in between space for sure, which I think is wonderful. But another thing that was really important to us then, and this is where I'm not sure how much there is, we tried to be we the AV Review was a space for that had really strict rules that were meant to then be liberating, but the really strict rule was you have to be reviewing somebody's work that isn't yours. Engaging with someone else's work, which is how we sort of defined the genre.
Right.
And that in our world, in the broadly speaking sort of like design world, I don't know how much more
Yeah.
of that there is in the last 10 years. There's some, certainly, more than there was. Anyway, so just reflecting on sort of the time that has passed. I mean, I guess another sort of thing we were thinking about then that I'll just think about out loud now is there was also an emphasis on a kind of medium form writing.
Yeah.
Something that was long enough to really develop. The essay, I guess, suppose was our shorthand for that. I think it wasn't all about length. Essay was also about a certain exploratory mode
Yeah.
of writing, but nonetheless long enough to develop an argument and begin one place and end another place. And honestly, I think that spirit actually is something that's very much very true in Omnibus. There's those long enough, their features are long enough to, and you end somewhere you didn't begin and having really sort of learned something. So anyway, I those 10 years have been a lot has happened in those 10 years. But some I still really value those goals, and they're still doing really great work at
Yeah.
the so anyway, I'm not sure what the
Yeah,
question
no,
is.
I like no, I mean it was a vague question. Sort of curious how you think about that original mission statement today. And I think you are right in sort of separating out platforms for publication and forms of writing, which I think is what I was thinking about the forms of writing more, because I agree there are more places to publish design writing today than there were in 2014, certainly. But something still feels missing to me, and it's what you articulated. It's this sort of the critical essay, the review, the writing about other people's work in a way that is thoughtful and rigorous, but also accessible and exploratory.
Right, right,
It's not quite, it's not an academic journal. It's not a blog post or a tweet. You
right.
know, there's that again. I'm sorry, squishy middle. There's
I know. I
that
got
essay in the middle.
it.
That still feels like there's places for development there, and I'm sort of curious how you think about that. And so you did answer that.
Yeah. Okay.
I'm going to apologize. I'm going to go even further back in time. I have just a couple questions to wrap up. You started your career. You were a associate editor at Princeton Architectural Press back in the early 2010s, and I'm curious how editing has influenced how you think about your work. It seems to me that running an organization like, the Architectural League, is a type of editorial project in some ways. It seems like there's relationships between those two acts. How do you think about editing as a metaphor for your work.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. And I don't know how much of that is a function of the fact that I kind of began in the editorial sphere and therefore, have just tended to see everything kind of, or at least lots of things through that lens, or how much of it is really like other people would observe the same thing. But in any case, it's useful to think with. I mean, for me, I'm settling into a career that's really about institution building and shaping. And there's something, the corollary with editorial work that I see there is that it's not necessarily about your voice. It's about, kind of bringing together and holding space for other people to develop theirs. And making sure that the frames for the conversations that you think need to happen, and there's tons of agency, so it's not to like become some neutral, non-actor. Really active work happens in the framing and supporting, to go back to that too, like the setup and pushing forward of these conversations. But nonetheless, it's about bringing other people and their voices and perspectives and work together. I think also just practically, like I take a lot of pleasure in both big picture, developmental editorial questions and line edits, proofreading. I like both of those kinds of work, and I find that analogy sort of carries into institutional work as well. Little things really matter. And the way you do something small can reflect much bigger ways of working and thinking, and vice versa. And so it's fun to toggle between those kind of registers. Not that they are much more sequential in editorial work, but still, yeah, I think that there's a relationship nonetheless.
Yeah, I
I don't
like
know.
that.
Oh no, I was just thinking if, there's something in editorial work, there's really like a, then this is maybe where the analogy kind of stops. I'm not sure. I was just contemplating the fact that in editorial work, there's a real end product. There's a thing, a place you land that you can celebrate with your fellow, travelers. It's a little different so far in the institutional work. Like it's a, I mean, we'll see. I'm still so new, but it's a lot. It's really ongoing. There's so many other moving parts.
I hate to ask you this next question,
Yeah,
but sort of in the spirit of not having a finished product, not having a thing, what's next? You're 6 months into this role. There's still a lot to learn, as you said at the beginning, but are you able to sort of articulate your goals for this new position and where you want to take the league next?
I mean, I think that insofar as there's a vision, I mean, I'm definitely not approaching this with any kind of heroic mindset. It's the league, not me. This is a many, many peopled group, and so there's just lots of ongoing conversations all the time. But I think insofar as there's a vision, it's so far it's really trying to settle into that notion of support and set ourselves up infrastructurally to be a solid place, I suppose is a word, or space, a reliable group that can be leaned on when the challenges that we face today only sort of increase in intensity. Like, I guess I just want to sort of push back against, I'd like us to be, insofar as it's possible, like a little bit less squishy and a reliable resource that our community members can come to, ask things of, depend on, because the work is really, really challenging. I guess I'll also say just more concretely, and this is very much, who knows where it's going to go, but the league in its 150 years of history, in certain at different points in time, has been much more in place to like has had a public space that different parts of our community can come use. We could do events at, we can do exhibitions at. And we have an office now that is that I welcome anybody to swing by and say hi. But it's an office with a big table, and the big table is great, and we use it for events. But it's still our office, you know. And so I'm thinking about it's fun to imagine. We'll see where it goes, but it's been useful to think about what might be possible in a more publicly accessible space that the community that we sort of serve can see themselves in, can use. Anyway, so we'll see. That's very much an ongoing sort of or conversation that's really just starting to maybe pick up steam. But nonetheless, I want to be useful for people, reliable.
I love that. I think that's a great way to wrap up. So I'm going to ask you the question that I used to end all of these. I'm curious what you're reading right now.
Ah, recently there's like a nonfiction answer and a fiction answer.
I want to hear both of them.
Okay. I relatively recently finished, they're both like real tomes. Recently finished The Dawn of Everything by David Graeber and David Wengrow,
Oh, yep.
which I can't recommend enough. It was a real page turner, which is saying something for a book like that. But it was really illuminating, for lack of a better word, and sort of well anyway, I don't need to go into detail about it, but I
Yeah,
definitely
that book
recommend
is literally sitting on the floor next to me, and
it.
I have not picked it up yet because of how big it is. I'm like, when am
Yeah.
I going to read this? I
Well, I was
don't
just
want to
gonna
just read
say
it in
you
drips.
actually well you can, but you can it's written in a way that you
Okay.
can do it in drips. It's actually like it's like this kind of incredible collection of short stories
Okay.
of like the history of the world. But it's written in ways that you can digest it in, you know, 5-10 page kind of
Okay.
gulp,
All right.
which actually for me made it move much more quickly than I thought it would.
Okay,
Um,
that's good to
the other
hear.
one, the other one is my like Oprah's book club moment is it's what's it called? Oh, The Covenant of Water by Abraham Verghese, I think is the
Oh,
last.
I don't know that one.
It's like a very, you know, epic sweeping you know, cross multiple generations kind of like story about Southwest India from like 1900 to 1975, you know, multiple generations of one family kind of thing. Anyway, it's a good before you go to bed, read.
Jacob, this was a blast. Thank you so much for being on the podcast.
This is wonderful. Yeah, it's been great to talk. Thank you for taking the time. And I would encourage everybody, by the way, to go check out the league website and look into being a member.
Love it. You're doing a great job as executive director, pushing the memberships right, right at the That was my conversation with Jacob Moore. It was recorded on February 23rd, 2024. Our theme music is by Jeremiah Chu. The show is and always will be free thanks to the generosity of our Patreon supporters. If you like what we're doing here, I hope you consider supporting us and get some bonus content each month. You can follow us across social media at Surface Podcast, and you can listen to all of our previous episodes wherever you get your podcasts and at our website, scratchingthesurface.fm. Thanks for listening.